It's Ed Balls and me, George Osborne, here from our podcast, Political Currency.
And we're really excited to tell you about a special series with David Cameron on the first 6 months as Prime Minister.
Letters to Trident submarine captains, hostage crises, that first budget. There's so much we pack into those first few months.
This is David Cameron, as you've never heard him before.
It's Barack Obama on the telephone going, well done, David, enjoy this moment. It's all downhill from here. I've had my rows with Sarkozy over the years, but whenever I see him, I always give him this big hug and thank him for letting me see my dad before he died.
Listen, enjoy, be provoked. Inside Number 10, David Cameron, the first 6 months.
Search for Political Currency wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by The Spectator's political editor Katie Balls and The Telegraph columnist Tim Stanley. Now, Katie, it's been a big week for Elon Musk and Labour and Nigel Farage. So tell us all about what's happened in the last 48 hours or so.
Well, there's obviously so many different angles to what has been the return, might even be the wrong word, but the grooming gang scandal going to the top of the news agenda, largely thanks to the tweets of Elon Musk. Now, I think has been discussed in depth on this podcast and on Spectator TV. The largest part of that story is about child grooming gangs, what happened, and where there'll be an inquiry. But it has dominated Westminster in such a way that is now having ramifications for every party leader. And I think for Keir Starmer, it's clearly incredibly uncomfortable. Not even just because he has Elon Musk directly saying that he is the problem, suggesting that he should be in jail and so forth, and his ministers, but also when you think about Labour's electoral base, the fact that they lost a lot of the Muslim vote in the general election, hope to get that back by the time of the next one. It's just a complicated situation for them in terms of their political calculations, as well as the questions being asked about whether there should be an inquiry, and it means it's hard for them to find a place to go. Then you have the Tories who are trying to lean into this, saying we have done some work in government with our task force and we actually think there should be an inquiry. But Kevin Badenoch and Robert Jenrick are, of course, fast discovering the issue with being incumbents for a lot of that time period. And then you have Nigel Farage, who initially seemed to be the beneficiary, is probably the wrong word to use in this type of situation, but seemed to probably be the leader who was best placed to make a political point on it and to lead the charge for an inquiry. And then, of course, Nigel Farage, who has a good relationship with Elon Musk, or at least did, who, of course, visited him in America along with the new treasurer, Nick Candy, posed for that photo. So one of the big stories ahead of Christmas was, will they get £100 million from Elon Musk through one of his companies? And if not, will they get a couple of million, which would still be a huge donation by UK standards? Only for Elon Musk to then tweet saying, Nigel Farage doesn't have what it takes and they need a new leader, which I think on the Sunday was probably a plot twist we thought would happen at some point, and just knowing the personalities, but one that we probably expect in about series three, not episode three of series one. And from that point, obviously, Reform MPs bandying around Nigel Farage, but also questions as to, well, will Reform now get this money? I think it's fair to say that Elon Musk's tweet took the Reform team by surprise.
Yeah.
a lot of thought about how to respond to it. And now the question, which is, has Nigel Farage's response and even that divide in the first place, which is, all comes down to Tommy Robinson, the jail activist. The fact that Elon Musk says free him and is almost talks him as a martyr. Nigel Farage takes a very different view, says he won't be welcome in Reform. And he's stuck by that view, saying, if that means I don't get money from Elon Musk, that's not such a bad thing. I like Elon Musk very much, but I'm not going to go on my principles. Doesn't mean Nigel Farage now comes out in a better light than before. I think there's certainly some in the Reform Party who think this could be useful for showing Reform as a party of the mainstream, not as some critics want to say, a party of the hard right.
Tim, how do you think Nigel Farage has handled all this? You've written about this for The Telegraph.
I met Nigel Farage on Boxing Day. I met him to interview him at a fox hunt meet, which has to be the most right-wing thing I've ever done, spending Boxing Day with Nigel Farage surrounded by foxhounds. And at that time, he called Elon Musk a bloody hero. He meant really bloody hero to young people in particular who were attracted to reform, but it sounded like a full-throttled endorsement. And then just a few days later, Elon Musk turns on him. And of course, initially we thought, how embarrassing. And that's the way that a lot of people, particularly left-wingers, responded to it, that it was like a twist in an episode of Emmerdale. But the reality is that it actually has given Nigel Farage an opportunity to say, I am not in favor of Tommy Robinson. There are limits to how close I'm willing to get to American politicians. And I'm actually prepared on a point of principle to say no to millions of pounds of donations because I will not be associated with that kind of far-right politics. So I think he's actually handled it well, and it has helped to make him look like a far more independent and moderate figure than many thought he was just a few days before. Now, what's interesting is that he has since hinted that he is willing to mend bridges between him and Elon. And that could be the next plot twist. Will there be some sort of reconciliation? Because the key thing here is, how does this affect relationships between Trump and Farage? That's what really matters. Because Nigel Farage is, at present, the political figure in Britain who is closest to the incoming president. And he's just had an almighty row with Donald Trump's latest best buddy, Elon Musk. So is that going to put a wedge between his relationship with the new administration? And how then does that affect relationships between Britain and America? So there's going to be a lot of attention paid over the inauguration. Does Nigel make up with Musk? Does Trump say something about all this and get involved? Either way, it puts Nigel at the heart of British politics, which is remarkable when you consider they've only got five MPs. It comes against the backdrop of Reform gaining in the polls such that in one, Reform had become the second party.
And, of course, that is one thing that Nigel Farage has been focusing his week on. The other, of course, is pressing ahead with the calls for an inquiry into the grooming gangs. This morning, Reform UK have been out talking about, they will say, look, if they're not going to be a public inquiry, we're going to hold our own, effectively a private inquiry. Talk us about the approach that he's taking versus, say, that of the Conservatives, Katie.
Well, they're both in pretty similar positions, I would say, on this. Both are calling for this inquiry. I mean, Reform have now said they'll do it themselves. We're yet to have the DIY inquiry offer from the Tories. But the Tories are instead trying to go through parliamentary means to force Labour's hand or to guilt Labour MPs enough that they decide to launch a full inquiry. But the general aim and end result is the same. And I think that when you think about, I suppose, the point that Nigel Farage has found himself at, I mean, we get back to Elon Musk, not to make everything about Elon Musk, but, you know, it has been noted by criminologists of X that Elon Musk has gone back to quote tweeting Nigel Farage in a way that is not negative. So to Tim's point, I think that the friendship slash relationship is not dead. It's just there's been a bit of turbulence, but Elon Musk still seems to like Reform and is flirting a little bit with the Tories at the same time, because Robert Jenrick gets retweeted, Kemi Badenoch on a good day gets retweeted, and then also Nigel Farage. And in terms of where that goes, I mean, I think there's a question as to probably what we saw on Sunday is, I don't think it is in the interest of a party leader to fall out with Elon Musk. But I also think there's probably a lesson in not staking too much of your leadership on it. And that's why I would still say it's probably been a little bit embarrassing for Nigel Farage what's happened in the past week, or the Reform Party. I think he's handled it probably the best he could in terms of his response to it. But of course, it was the Reform Party that was building up Elon Musk as a key ally of theirs, you know, flying to America, releasing the photos, almost in a gloating way talking about the fact they might get donations in a way that spooked the Tories and Labour. And that might also happen, but they built Elon Musk up as the champion Reform to the point that it suddenly mattered a bit more than it would have done otherwise when he said no to Nigel Farage, and everyone started saying, well, he seems to like Rupert Lowe's tweets. So I think there's some bumps there. But you can imagine that, you know, they go, and I also think, you know, Nigel Farage only met Elon Musk for the first time a month or so ago. It was Mar-a-Lago. Ultimately, it was the celebration for Donald Trump winning, whereas his relationship with Donald Trump goes back a much longer time. And we are so far at the moment, Donald Trump is very demure next to Elon Musk in terms of what he is saying publicly about the UK and so forth. And you look at, you know, Susie Wiles, you look at some people in Donald Trump's team, and it feels, you know, there is at least a strong wing of his team who are not going for such a combative approach at the moment as the one Elon Musk is. So I suspect Nigel Farage's relationships with the White House are still better than any other UK political leader. In terms of where I think we go to next on the grooming gang scandal, you have Robert Jenrick, who managed to secure the 8:10 slot today on the Today programme.
Prestigious.
Much to the delight of Robert Jenrick supporters. He's now being accused, you know, by the BBC and others of almost politicising this because he didn't speak about it enough times in the chamber previously and so forth. Then you have the previous chair of the inquiry suggesting that another inquiry is not needed. So I think we're reaching the point where anyone talking about this as a politician is now at the risk of being told you're doing this for your own gain and so forth. But I think it has crossed that point now where there are enough forces, I think, in terms of the press, in terms of politics, in terms of the country, talking about the need for another inquiry, one that would specifically look at how grooming gangs worked, that I think it's hard to dismiss anyone talking about it as completely dishonest or self-serving. And the other element is the Robert Jenrick-Kemi Badenoch relationship at the moment, because, you know, you have some saying, well, if there are these prime slots on the broadcast today, shouldn't the Tory leader, who some say isn't out there enough, being going out and doing it, or is she trusting her shadow justice secretary, but one-time leadership rival, who some think might still have ambitions to do it? And also, you know, who's leading who in terms of where the rhetoric is going, because Jenrick has gone further than someone the party would go. Kemi Badenoch has so far defended him, but I think it's interesting to see, you know, does it get to a point where he goes, you know, another step further than she would?
Yeah, talk about joined up opposition. Tim, what did you make of Keir Starmer's press conference yesterday? He was at pains not to try and antagonise Elon Musk with his comments. He referred only once briefly to him by name. How do you think the reaction has gone down to what he said as he tried to react to what Musk said while also attempting to talk about the NHS?
It was a disaster. Bear in mind that the whole point of this was to reset the government for the new year and talk about the NHS. And actually, Labour's policies in that are pretty bold. He talked about the NHS shouldn't be a money pit. He talked about using the private sector. But when it came to the questions, the media, of course, wanted to talk about the grooming gang scandal and Elon Musk. And initially, Starmer tried to dismiss the Musk angle and say, I'm not going to talk about that and I'm going to focus on... And he gave a defence of his role when he was DPP in the child grooming. And then he seemed to get goaded by it, and he really got into it, and he gave a full-throttle defence of Jez Phillips, and he attacked the Tories and suggested that unnamed Tory MPs, I suspect he meant Rob Jenrick, are jumping on a far-right bandwagon. And by so doing, he came across as stonkingly tone-deaf. This issue gets to the heart of what I see, which is this extraordinary cultural divide between the rest of Britain and Westminster and the different ways in which they think about issues. The view of Labour is actually quite a reasonable one. It's that this scandal happened over 10 years ago. Some of the cases that have been dredged up in the last few days are two decades old. Mm. They say when Keir Starmer was DPP, he enforced the law, prosecuted people, and at the time, he and other Labour people did say that race should not be a factor that in any way clouds investigations of rape. So as far as they're concerned, and then there was an inquiry, which, as they say, covered all forms of child abuse, which produced recommendations, which Labour point out the Tories then didn't act on. So from Labour's point of view, the only reason why you would suddenly jump on this story is because you are being goaded by Elon Musk to antagonise people, wind up the public. And you're doing that largely because you want to point the finger at Asian migrants. That's Labour's point of view. And then the Tories look at this and go, but the issue is the rape of children. The issue is not the politics around this. The issue is not Elon Musk. The point is this horrific thing happened some time ago, and we never properly discussed why or how it happened or the consequences of it. And yes, there was an inquiry, but the inquiry didn't deal specifically with what they call Pakistani heritage grooming gangs. So therefore, we need another one. So to return to Westminster after having been away, I found the atmosphere there very ugly. And it's because Labour MPs don't like being accused of being soft on paedophilia, but Tory MPs don't like being accused of being Nazis, right? This gets to the heart of that cultural, emotional division between left and right. But ultimately, blame for this thing spiralling out of control really lies with Keir Starmer, because to go back to that press conference, this was an opportunity for him to articulate a sense of anger and disgust at the scandal. And instead, in a very bureaucratic fashion, he defended his record. Of course he condemned child grooming. Of course he did. But he basically defended his record, defended Jez Phillips, and tried to turn this into a matter of honour for the left that was being slandered by Rob Jenrick. and by so doing, totally failed to articulate that sense of horror that the rest of the public has. Because GB News has been pushing this story in the last few weeks, and because it's been picked up by Elon Musk, a lot of ordinary voters are discovering what happened in places like Rotherham for the first time. And when they read these stories, they think, how did this ever happen? And why weren't these people properly investigated? Why weren't they prosecuted for racially aggravated crimes as well as everything else? And they just want a politician who can say, yeah, I get it. It's horrific and disgusting, and Britain should be ashamed that this was allowed to happen. And right now it feels, it might be incoherent, it might be dumb, but it actually feels like Elon Musk's ignorant tweets better reflect the emotion of ordinary British people than politicians who are going into damage control. And that's the fundamental problem. This story should not be going in the direction it's going. It's not going because the Prime Minister can't control it. He's emotionally and politically out of his depth, and he doesn't know how to ride events like this.
And you can see the UK government and Keir Starmer trying to say, hey, we have a grip on some of these things and we're responding. Look, we're bringing in two of the recommendations from the inquiry in the first place. You've had that announcement from the Home Office. But I think while you have the other party saying, no, go a bit further, and to Tim's point, it feels at times that Keir Starmer's more upset at the potential personal threats against one of his own ministers than talking about it as a wider issue. It means I don't think there feels there's too much of a lid on this at the moment. And I think that there's also this strange triangulation of when you go back to that press conference, I think that Downing Street are of the view they did not have any personal barbs at Elon Musk. So they, you know, their whole strategy has been, oh, we're not going to bait the troll. We think we're... They don't even want to call them a troll in any way that would go back to them. But effectively, they don't want to get into a war of words. They've done it before. They came to regret it pretty quickly. If you think about the time of the Southport riots, that was the first time I think there was a real fracas between the two. So we're not going to engage directly, but we're going to talk about Keir Starmer's record as DPP and so forth. But then the question came up about Jess Phillips, who, of course, Elon Musk has been saying deserves to go to jail. There's lots of worry on the Labour side about, you know, her own personal safety as a result of that. That's when Keir Starmer had this impassioned defence. But in their mind, even though that's still quite clearly becoming about Elon Musk saying things and accusing him, I feel there's a slight, amongst some supporters of Keir Starmer, confusion as to why this is now Keir Starmer versus Elon Musk, because they don't want to get into this straight fight, but they also don't want to completely ignore it. And it does mean it all feels a bit muddled in terms of what is coming from 10 Downing Street at the moment.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffee Hour Shots.